For your safety, remain seated with the doors closed, keeping your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside while the tram is moving. And supervise your children.
Welcome, foolish mortals, to the Haunted Mansion.
Because this here's the wildest ride in the wilderness!
Soar into tower. We are ready for takeoff.
Dead men tell no tale.
I know not who you are, nor how I came to find you. But may I just say, aye.
Come on, everybody. Here we go.
A very special treat for you today. Two of some of our friends, some of our favorite people are here to talk about a very special project. First up, we have award-winning actor, director, producer, Derek Mackey. Hi, Derek.
Hello.
And a multifaceted, wonderful, downright human actor, Doug Jones.
Hello.
You are one of the best, Doug. I just have to say, I could have said so many more things about you, but you are one of our absolute favorites, and we are very honored to talk to you again.
Oh, the honor's all mine. Thank you, precious. Aw.
Okay, so the reason that we are speaking to you today is because you have a very special project that's coming up, and we wanted to make sure that all of our viewers and readers knew all about it, and it is called Get Me Doug Jones. Mm-hmm. And Derek, would you like to tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you better start there, because it was his idea, not mine. I mean, trust me.
It was my idea.
I don't need a documentary about this.
And Doug said no twice, but you know, we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay. All right.
So this is basically my love letter to Doug. I have known Doug for a little over 18 years now and have celebrated triumphs with him. I have had him cry on my shoulder for some downfalls. It just the bumpy road that is an actor's career. And in all these years that I've known him, I feel personally that Doug has never received the accolades that he deserves for the things that he does on the silver screen. And it drives me absolutely crazy. So I decided that I would tell this story and let the world know that he's more than just this one character that you may or may not know of him on screen. And this is also my way of getting, hopefully, politely, the Academy's attention to go, hey guys, look at this amazing performer that you've kind of forgotten all these years. So that's kind of the concept of Get Me Doug Jones. It's a complete life retrospective up until the moment, because Mr. Jones is still alive and kicking. And we just want to show everyone out there what he's gone through and how he perseveres, because really at the end of the day, that, you know, all those times, it's only a very small, but the times he did cry on my shoulder or had a bad bump in the road, he persevered and he got through it. And that's how actors survive, you know, instead of giving up and packing up their bags and going home. Doug didn't do that. You know, he's here in Hollywood doing it every day.
And let it be known, too, that the relationship here was because Derek is my appearance manager. He's been handling all of my convention appearances and speaking gigs and that kind of thing. Where if I go somewhere live, I have other people for the TV and film part of my career. But Derek handles the in-person stuff where I get to meet the public. And that's how we met you the first time, Michelle and Scott. And so that's why we have this history where we've traveled together, we have dined together, we have gone through lots of fan interactions together. He's watched and observed all this all these years. So that's where he comes up with this idea that he needed a documentary. I don't think he does. But anyway, so I did object twice. And the third time, finally, we were in Las Vegas doing a Star Trek convention.
I ambushed him.
I was a series regular on Star Trek Discovery for 5 seasons. So a couple of years ago at a Star Trek convention in Las Vegas, he texted me, hey, before we go down to the floor today, stop by my hotel room. I want to talk about something with you. So I stopped by his room and I'm ambushed. It was him and a brilliant director named William Conlon. William is a documentarian and a journalist, and he comes from a family of journalists. that have done TV interviews and that kind of thing for decades. So, and he did a documentary called Making Apes.
Making Apes. It's an amazing documentary about the makeup effects and the impact that Planet of the Apes, the original movie series, had. Mm-hmm. And I watched it. It's on Amazon. So anyone out there who wants to check it out, Making Apes on Amazon. It was incredible. I watched it, and it wasn't just talking heads in a boring documentary. It was intriguing, and there was a storyline, and it was intertwined. And when it was over, I was like, this was just amazing. I need him to direct Doug's documentary because it'll be captivating and interesting. And
so that's what the pitch I got in this hotel room. Like, here's William, and here's his background, and here's his pedigree. So I thought, oh gosh, it sounds like I'll be in good hands now. So I said yes. And so they pulled out cameras and started filming that day at the convention. So they got enough footage in that first day to make a documentary unto itself, because all the interaction I had with people coming up to my table, all of the photo ops and a panel that I did, and they followed me around the hallways and saying hi to people. And then they got exit interviews from fans who'd been just interacted with me at my table. And I thought we're done here, but that was 2 years ago. So in the meantime, they've been collecting a ton of interviews from everyone I've worked with, whether it's co-stars, directors, makeup artists, a lot of people from the industry. And the part that I wanted, if we're going, I've talked about my career ad nauseum over the years, but what I wanted to add, if we're going to make a documentary called Get Me Doug Jones, I also want it to include the Doug Jones part that goes outside my characters. And that would be the Dougie that became the actor. And where do we get that story from? Well, we're interviewing my three older brothers and other extended family members, best friends of 30 plus years. Those people had a side and a story about me that no one has ever heard before. So that's kind of what I want to include in this.
Hey, so you were talking about, I just want to rewind for 1 second. You were talking about how this all started at a convention, and how you said you got a little bombarded, and, you know, Derek was very, very convincing, shall we say, to let you do this. And I know you, Doug, I've known you for about 5 years, and you are one of the most humble, gracious people that I have ever met in my entire life. And I can imagine, Derek, that it was kind of a lot of, you know, like, let's do this. But you, one thing about you, Doug, that I find that only people that meet you or get to go to conventions know about you is how you are with your fans. I mean, away from the characters and such that you do, I'm talking about, because we've seen you on a personal level a few times. And I think that... And Derek, I'm sure that you can back me on this. It's something to be seen, for sure. The care, how you are with people, and how you don't rush people through your line, and how you make sure that every fan that walks away from your table feels good and feels happy that they met you. And I think that that is wonderful that that is being included, because, you know, I know you don't like to hear it all the time, but you really are so nice to people, Doug. And do you think that was important too? Either one of you can answer, to let people see Doug away from work and just how he is, like, interacting with people and such like that.
Well, I thank you so much for all of those observations and comments. I can't live up to that, but thank you. The convention experience is a safe environment to meet the people who've been watching my work all these years. I'm one of those actors who absolutely loves the convention scene. I love the interaction. And one at a time, I'll hear one person after another will tell me what they saw me in, when they saw it in their life, what was going on in their life at the time, and how it might have helped them through that moment. Whether it's, I've heard everything from death, a lot of deaths in the family, I used to watch this or that with my dad, and now he's gone, and when I watch it again, it kind of brings him back again. I love those stories. Or people that'll tell me they've been through cancer treatment, so their chemo too. They would watch something or binge watch this or that while they were getting their treatments done, and it kind of helped raise their spirits during that time. Change of jobs, loss of jobs, moving from out of state, moving away from friends and family. I hear all kinds of things that happened at a time when something I was in was playing, and you don't realize the moments that are marked in people's lives and how you're there for it without even knowing it. So if without an experience, I wouldn't hear these. So that's why I love it.
And I think to continue on that as well, and I use Doug as an example to a lot of new clientele that I interview to be hired as their appearance managers. You know, back in the day, this industry has changed. So like the big agencies that I won't say names because I don't want to upset people, but the big acting agencies in Hollywood that represent big names for movies, they always looked at the convention circuit as for has-beens or never-wers. And what they never understood was the ability that the ability that an actor can use it for themselves to build their brand. They were so blinded by it. Mm-hmm. And it was me and just a couple of other people who did what I did that saw what the potential was in the industry that, yeah, you make a couple of dollars while you're there, but that's not really what it's about. The brand building. You know how everybody does brand building now? Instagram, Twitter, mm-hmm. Facebook. But conventions were those platforms before they existed. We were the original brand building and getting out there in social media because you were social in person there. And so now the big agencies are having all their big A-list actors come out to conventions because they finally get it. I've been doing this 29 years.
Wow.
So it took them 28 years to figure that out. I mean, it's so mundane. And I've watched Doug from the day I met him, when he only had like a handful of photos on the table, you know, now he's got, I think we have 41 images on the table, plus toys, plus posters, plus limited editions, plus pins. We're talking about a massive career that we want everyone to know about it. And that's part of the reason why we have so many pictures. So a Hocus Pocus fan will come up to Doug, and while they're waiting to meet him, they're looking at all the photos on his table going, oh my God, he was that character? Oh, wow, he was that character? Well, I didn't know he was that character. And then they'll get an extra picture, or when they get up to him, they'll start talking. I didn't know you did all of those things. Brand building. Wow. So, yeah.
And I think I think that, you know, being that social media is a big part of what we do, I think it's almost time to revert back. Because getting out and talking to people instead of just doing social things, Derek, you were onto it long before. And I think that it's so important. I know you agree, Doug, as far as getting out and meeting your fans and having that one-on-one interaction. And like you said, they might know you from one thing or another, but I know our audience knows you from Hocus Pocus.
Right. Yeah. With our audience being a heavy Disney following, and they, like you said, some of the people walk up the table and they go, oh my gosh, you were in this movie. And that's a lot of people. When we actually met the two of you for the first time in person, a lot of people were coming because of Billy Butcherson from Hocus Pocus, a very beloved character in Disney. One of her absolute favorites. And I got to talk to you a lot, Doug, about that character and that role and everything you had to go through to bring Billy to life. But would you mind, and I have to say this for myself, being a Marvel fan, Silver Surfer, as I've talked to you about that as well, that absolutely love that you were in the Fantastic Four as the Silver Surfer and played that role and brought that character that I knew only from comic books to life for me to see on the big screen, which I loved seeing. But what other characters, I know you mentioned Star Trek and things like that, but what other characters, if you wouldn't mind just taking a few moments to tell our audience some of the things you've done.
So I'll interject one thing while he thinks about his answer. Don't forget now, Silver Surfer is technically Disney now.
Technically it is.
It is.
They own Fox Studios, and that's where we were born. Yeah, so, okay. Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, how about that, right?
Yes, I was the Silver Surfer in the Fantastic Four sequel, Rise of the Silver Surfer. When you're this close to Jessica Alba, you realize just how gorgeous that woman is. Yeah, it's true. And Chris Evans too, my gosh, right? Everybody's pretty except for me. That's why they cover me with rubber. But I'll tell you, also aside from Star Trek Discovery, my other TV appearances would be, I was a recurring character on What We Do in the Shadows, playing Beto Navas on the FX network, and on airs on Hulu, also owned by Disney. Also was a series regular on a show called Falling Skies. And we also, a little tidbit here, we have the lead actor from both Star Trek Discovery and Falling Skies, Sonequa Martin-Green and Noah Wyle, are in the documentary. Oh, already have their interviews have been filmed already. And other things, I was also the lead gentleman in the Hush episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Very, very famous fan favorite episode of that. So that's TV. I guess starred on Arrow and The Flash as a DC villain called Deathbolt. And then let's see. I also then let's back to movies. Early days would be I did some quirky movies like Tank Girl and Warriors of Virtue. Both of those movies I played a kangaroo man in.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
wow. Say that. I played two kangaroos.
And I played two fishmen in my life. That would be Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies, mm-hmm. and also the amphibian man in the Oscar winning Shape of Water. And those are both Guillermo del Toro films, as well as I was also in a lot of his movies, Mimic and Hellboy 1 and 2, Pan's Labyrinth, another Oscar winner. I played two characters in that, El Fauno and this guy, the Pale Man. And then I also was in Crimson Peak as two of his ghost ladies, and then in The Shape of Water, and also his TV show, The Strain. I did six episodes of The Strain, as which is another vampire show. So there's a lot of life going on there, and then Hocus Pocus 1 and 2, of course, are beloved Billy Butcherson, but I adore him myself. So to get back to getting back to play him again 29 years after the first one was a treat, an unexpected treat. I know so many fans have been clamoring for a part two and been asking for a part two, and the longer it went away, I was like, oh, I don't know if that's ever going to happen. And so finally, when that came around, I was like, are you kidding me? Of course, man. Yeah, of course I'll be in that. So it was a real treat to get back with the ladies again. And we four immortals were the only four that came back from the first movie, the three witches and me. And but back in costume, wigs and makeup, everybody looked, we all looked pretty like the same. So I was very impressed with the team that put us all together.
Yeah. So I did a little article last week about Hocus Pocus 3, and I know that people are this franchise has really, it's been over 30 years since the first one. I mean, we did that big panel a few years ago with some of the original cast, which is one of my shining moments that I'll never forget.
That reunion panel was the biggest one we've ever done anywhere. So you got more cast members together than anybody else ever has. So God bless.
Okay. So you know what? I do brag about that with the House of Mouse Expo that we've had the largest panel. So if that ever changes, Doug, you have to tell me so I stop saying that. I don't want to be wrong, you know? But like I said, the character of Billy Butcherson is so beloved even through all of this, and you know, through, you know, the different movies and the fandoms and the conventions and all that good stuff, and I love it myself. So see, I get all fanny a little bit myself, Doug. And I think that it's wonderful, these characters that you have played and characters that have meant so much to so many. And I'm sure with all the prosthetics and such that you have been under, I don't know, Derek, a lot of people probably don't even realize that that's our beloved Doug Jones under some of those costumes.
Yeah. And anytime we go somewhere, like we just celebrated my birthday and Doug had come, we were at a restaurant and the manager there knows my family and I told him a few of my celebrity clients might show up. And when I told him about, you know, Doug Jones is coming, and I just assume everyone knows who Doug is. And he's like, who's Doug Jones? So I have this on my phone. I have a picture of his banner that we use it at conventions. And when I bring it up, I show it to them. So I'm showing it to the manager. And she's like, I know that. Oh, he kept going, that's him. And I went, yes. So we got a picture with him before we left. And now you have to sign an autograph because I told him we would do it. But like, that's what happens, is you get that excitement from Doug's done so much, but in the minute you show what they've done, they're like, well, I know all of those characters, mm-hmm. or the majority of them. And that's, It's amazing. You know, like I can't describe it because again, I know him. So for me, I lose track, you know, when you know someone enough, you lose track of that famous part of them. Yeah. And so you can forget sometimes, but people get so excited. And that's, again, part of the reason why we're making the movie, and it's exciting. So, and let's talk about Hocus Pocus more, since you guys are very Disney centric.
Yes.
So some really cool interviews that we were able to obtain. So we have Doug's makeup artist, Tony Gardner.
That did my Billy Butcherson look for both Hocus Pocus 1 and 2.
Right. So, oh, and I'll have to show you. We love doing exclusives for people. So I'll have to show you an exclusive picture of Tony and us on during his interview. And then we also were able to get David Kirshner, who is the creator, writer, and executive producer of Hocus Pocus. David adores this man. So why don't you talk a little bit about Tony and David for a second while I look for this picture to show you.
I met Tony Gardner on Hocus Pocus 1. That was our first job together. And we got along so well. We giggled every day and had so much fun. And I'm sure he'll tell a story or two from that first shoot in the documentary. We kind of messed with the assistant directors a little bit because we were the first ones there on set every day, and they would come later and knock on the door to make sure we were in process. Well, one day we left the makeup trailer and went into another like cast trailer that wasn't being used, and they put my makeup on there, just waiting to hear the ADs scurrying around the base camp going, "Have you seen Doug? We haven't seen Doug. Yeah, yeah." And we were laughing and hilarious. And we finally opened the door and said, "Are you guys looking for us?" Like a half hour later, like, oh gosh, there you are. They all thought they were going to get fired because we weren't there. But yeah. So Tony's that guy that will do anything for fun. And then David Kirshner, of course, he wasn't on set with us a whole much, but we do have a great black and white picture that was taken when he did come visit us. And it's me as Billy Butcherson cupping his face in my grave. And surrounded by Kenny Ortega, our director, and producer Ralph Winter, and I believe and Tony. And what now?
There's one more guy at the top.
And Mrs. Laurie, I think, was in the picture too. My lovely wife was visiting that day. So anyway, David's a sweetheart, and he is the one who kept my original costume and my original wig, and it's on a dummy of me as Billy in his office.
Yeah, which I can show you guys that as well. That'll be an exclusive for
life size. So look,
this is when Tony came. I'll hold this up to the screen. So he brought the color correction. It's always horrible. He brought Billy Butcherson's head with him. It's not looking good on the screen, unfortunately. Let me come closer.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, no,
there you go. There you go.
Oh, wow.
So I took that as a gimmick picture. Really cool. And then, of course, Tony was there holding it. So this is Tony with our director, William, and I.
Holding my head.
Holding his head.
And your head, Doug. Yeah.
And then David is so gracious. So he's become such a wonderful human being to know, and I'm so honored to know him. And anytime we need something, he's like, "Derek, if it's for you and Doug, I'll do it." So we went to his office, and he signed some Hocus Pocus posters for us that we're going to be giving away, offering on the campaign. But in the picture, that's what I want to show you guys. So Billy Butcherson is in the back. This is the actual.
Oh, that's the life size.
That's the actual. The actual. So that's actual Billy Butcherson
in his home office.
In his home office.
Yeah. That's incredible.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I wish I could show it more clear, guys. I'm trying my best here. Yeah.
No, you're good. You're good.
But that's so awesome. It's been great. But so we have one more exclusive for you guys.
Oh, a piece of information.
Piece of information. It's a Hocus Pocus piece of information. Ooh. And I'm actually going to let Doug do the honors of the big reveal.
Well, aside from all the names we've mentioned so far, people that have been interviewed for the documentary, I was surprised recently. They didn't tell me that this was in the works, but director William and Derek were colluding to get an interview that was rather difficult to get, I would think.
That's putting it lightly.
Yeah. but finally consented and finally sat down for an interview, and that was our the divine Miss M, Bette Midler. I know, right? I know. Yeah, I was. When I heard
that's awesome.
When I heard the news, I screamed. I was like, "How did you get her?" I mean, because we don't do this every day, Bette and I. You know, we get along great when we're working together, but you know, otherwise it's like she's huge and I'm like Doug Jones, but she's Bette Midler, right? You know what I'm saying? Right. Yeah. So I can't wait to. Well, they're not letting me see or hear any of these interviews. So I'm going to see it all cut together and see what she said about me. I have no idea. She might've called me a jackass for all I know.
No, I don't think so. That's awesome. That's and amazing. What an honor, but see how wonderful you are, Doug. See, I mean, this is incredible. And Derek, you being able to pull all this together just because you feel so strongly about, Doug and the work he's done and how, just what a special person he is in general. That's awesome. That's amazing.
Every actor that has said yes has been because of you, not because of me, not because of William. It's our love letter to Doug, and it's for Doug. And they're like, if it's for Doug, we'll do it. So it's just been.
Yeah, that's so sweet.
No one dislikes you.
Nobody that we've met. Because I've over the years, being that we have had you a couple times to the show, I always get asked, like, what was he like in person? You know, because unfortunately, there is some celebrities who get this stigma attached to them based on they're either signing too fast that their fan doesn't get even a second to even speak to them, really. And I'm like, Doug is fantastic. I mean, he will take his time with you. He will talk to you. He wants to hear what you have to say, you know. And I always tell him how humble you are. Another thing I always tell them, and they're shocked by, is that you were Mac the Knight in the original McDonald's commercial way back in the day. People are shocked to hear that.
I've done over 100 commercials in my career. That's how I started, actually. And my fourth TV commercial booking back in the mid-80s was the Mac Tonight campaign for McDonald's. Yes, the Crescent Moon had sunglasses on, sang at a piano, "Hey, when the clock strikes, at the sleep." Wow. Thank goodness for McDonald's, too, because that, though, 27 commercials and 3 years later, I was able to buy my first house. So thank you for that. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's great. So, Derek, is there certain things or anything that extra sentimental or that you may be surprised Doug with when it comes to doing this? Anybody special that was interviewed that, you know, kind of got to Doug's heart, you know, anything, any kind of mushy-gushy kind of stuff that you might want to share?
It would be your teacher.
It would be my high school drama teacher. Yes. We were able to catch up with her in Florida. We were on our way to the Star Trek cruise and we went a day early because she is retired now in Florida. My high school is in Indiana and she's retired in Florida with her husband, and they made the trip to come see us and sit down. And she and I had not seen each other in over 40 years. So they actually caught us on film seeing each other for the first time.
Unstaged.
Organically, unrehearsed, unstaged. Yeah, we hadn't seen each other. And it was a lot of screaming and face cupping and hand holding and kissy kissy and huggy huggy and sitting together, holding hands, telling old stories. And it was that's the one interview that I actually got to be in on, because we interviewed each other, she and I. But to go back to, you know, she knew me when I was 14 and beyond. So when you're going, if you're going to tell the Doug Jones story, that was the beginning of it. As far as me, the actor, Dougie, the actor started with, she was the first person who kind of knew, had the resources to do something with whatever I came in the room with. You know, so she put me on stage and she gave me, you know, parts in plays and guided me through how to take a character on and perform it. So I owe her a lot to give me that early confidence of getting up in front of people. Without her, I don't know that I would have, you know.
That's absolutely amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because to be able to, somebody who touched you and helped mold you to where you've gotten to. That's just fascinating to be able to go back and actually talk to her. And the fact that you were able to capture that, that video, and put that with the documentary. Besides that, and I know you said you haven't seen the interviews yet, but is there anything else in the filming that you're excited to see once it all comes together? Or is it just the whole documentary? Is there a certain part that's like, can't wait to see how it played out on the big screen?
Well, yeah, I think Sealand. Sealand. Oh my gosh. Okay. So we got to start with the beginning of this one. if you haven't heard of the Principality of Sealand, they call themselves the smallest country in the world, and it's more of a principality. I was on the Facebook one day looking at stuff, and an ad came up for you can buy a title in Sealand. And I thought, I've played a couple of sea creatures. I would love to have a noble title in wherever this is. So I looked at Sealand, and it is a platform out in the water in the between Great Britain and Belgium is the North Sea. It's just north of the English Channel. And out in the water, there were a whole bunch of military outposts were put up in World War II to protect the shores of England. And World War II ended, and they took a bunch of them down, and this one stayed up. And it's just outside of British-owned waters. So one day in 1967, a man named Roy goes out there, plants a flag, and says, "This is my country." And he called it Sealand, and it has been Sealand ever since. And their motto in Latin is E Mare Libertas, which is freedom of the sea. And he said, because their purpose really is to live as free as they want without a government over their heads. They're their own governing, you know, they're their own royalty. So now Roy is passed on, and now his son, Michael, Prince Michael, is the reigning monarch, and his wife, Princess May. And Derek, once I did this, I'm a Duke now. I got a Duke title. So I'm Duke Dougie of Sealand.
Oh, wow.
And Derek didn't want to be outranked, so he got online and also purchased himself a Duke title. But so with this, then Sealand is very active on the social medias. Mm-hmm. And so Derek got a hold of them on their socials, and then got to their website and got to a PR person, and then they passed him on to Prince Michael. Mm-hmm. And they all said, "Oh, we know who Doug is," because we'd all been following each other on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. So it's like, I didn't realize they were aware of me, but I was very much aware of them. And so he hears, "Oh no, we know who Doug is." Oh yeah. So then he said, "Okay." So Derek is, this is the producer part of him. He's like, "Okay, what can I do to get us to Sealand? Because you can't just go visit. You can't just go like take a bus to Sealand. There's no way." So you have to be invited, and they have to make a day of it. So we did a convention in Edinburgh, Scotland, and Manchester, England, a week apart from each other. And the week in between the two conventions, we had days off and could go to Sealand. So he worked it out with Prince Michael. They're like, "Yes, come. And we got on a boat and we went out there and met the...
It was incredible.
Magical. Best experience. Best day ever, going to Sealand. And it was all caught on film for the documentary. Yeah, so that was a surprise. That's another surprise little thing wedged in there. That's like, you know, if you think that my career is nothing but, or my life is nothing but my IMDb credits, this will be a chapter that you didn't expect, right?
Interesting. Cool.
No, yeah. And I think that's one thing that people, and I know myself, would be interested to see. Like I said at the beginning when we introduced you, that you are so multifaceted, and it's not just your career, it's your life in general. And Derek, I think that's great that you are focusing on that, because he is so deserving of the recognition and all of that. So what, Derek, is like the release plan for this film? I mean, where are we at with all of that?
Right. So I'm very proud to tell everyone that asked me this question that we were actually able to raise the money for principal photography all on our own through private investors. That's wonderful. Very difficult for an independent filmmaker to do. So right now, the goal with the film is we do want to be in theaters, and eventually it'll end up on a platform one way or another. The dream is that we go to a film festival and some big studio like Warner Brothers or Fox sees us and says, "We love this project. Here's a check. Now we own it and the whole world will see it." If that doesn't happen, we're going to do independent like art houses like the Alamo Draft House, Lamley Theaters here in LA type of thing, and get it on a limited number of screens across the country so that it will have a theatrical release no matter what. And it'll be 2027. And what we're doing right now, starting on Monday, May 18th, we're actually going to be doing a crowd finishing campaign. So even though we were able to raise all the funds to shoot the movie on our own, there are some music rights that we want to have. We've got to pay our editor. We've got to pay for color correcting. And we got to pay to go to film festivals. What a lot of people don't realize about the film festival circuit, like when you see all these big A-list actors out at cons overseas, they think, wow, look at that. Well, they don't understand that the studios have to pay for all that. Cons doesn't pay for that. So in order for us to get into cons or any other film festival, you have to pay to get your film submitted. If your film doesn't get accepted, you don't get the money back. Then you've got to deal with flights and transport and all of that. So we have a lot of things that we still need to pay for, and we're running out. So we would like to ask for everyone's help. Starting on May 18th on Kickstarter, we're going to have a bunch of perks that people can buy. It can be very cheap, $25, and it goes all the way, I think, like to 10 grand for a certain item. And Doug has been gracious enough to donate from his personal archives a lot of cool things. We've got some Star Trek Discovery and What We Do in the Shadows shooting scripts. We've got some prosthetics from Discovery. We've got all kinds of like exclusive autographs from people that we've mentioned, you know, already that have been in the project. So those are going to be like perks that we're asking people that, you know, if they believe in the project the way that we do and would like to help us out, we'd appreciate it. You can find more at getmedougjones.com, which is the official website. If you're only on the socials, it's getmedougjones on Instagram and Facebook. And then if you go to Kickstarter, I believe you can put in Get Me Doug Jones in the search engine and our preview page pops up. Oh. And then you can be put on alert. Like once the page goes live, Kickstarter will shoot you an email. But I know people don't like getting inundated with emails, so I'm not asking you to do that. I'm just asking you on May 18th to go to Kickstarter and see, you know, what we have to offer, because we'd appreciate the help so that this story can be told and be out there for the masses.
Yes. And before we wrap up, what's one thing, either or both of you, do you think people will take away the most after watching Get Me Doug Jones? What are you hoping that they will take away from this project?
I think that's a great question. I probably that a skinny kid from Indiana can make his dreams come true. I think, and that would be applied to anybody from any state, any country. Dreams can come true, and that it takes a village to make that happen. And you're going to be hearing it from all the villagers.
That's great.
I'll just ditto that. That's the perfect answer. Ditto.
Ditto. I'm the village idiot, just so you know.
No, you are not. Stop it. Okay, well, we really appreciate you guys taking the time to speak with us, and thank you for the exclusive on Bette Midler. That's yes. really exciting.
And the images, the photos.
And the images. Thank you so much. And you know we're always here to help you guys with whatever you need. We are very happy for you. We wish you all the best of luck. And everybody who's watching, go to getmedougjones.com.
May 18th, make sure you go to the Kickstarter and help out. And we'll make sure to do our part to help spread the word on this for sure.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Scott, I love your Billy Butcherson shirt.
You noticed that. Okay, I was hoping you would see.
He did that just for you.
You probably can't see, but I also have your Funko Pop somewhere behind me as well.
Oh, yeah, yay. Thank you.
Thank you both so much, and best of luck. We love you both, and can't wait to see the finished project.
Love you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our trip around the Magic Kingdom is almost complete. I can't thank you enough for spending part of your day with me. And I hope you've enjoyed your journey as much as I've appreciated being a part of it.
Ladies and gentlemen, please gather your belongings, watch your head and step as you exit, and take small children by the hand.
On behalf of our entire flight crew, thanks for soaring with us.
Now I will raise the safety bar, and a ghost will follow you home. Ha 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 ha!